We're going to read together from Daniel chapter 3. We're going to read verse 1 through to verse 30, which is all the chapter. So 30 verses. It's going to take some reading, but this is God's word. It's gold. It's precious. And this is just such a great story. There was no way that we could interrupt it partway through. If you don't have a Bible, there are some in the pews. You might be able to grab one and share with somebody. It's not an easy book to find, Daniel, so I'll give you a few moments to do that. And just a really great story. It's, like I say, it's a long reading, so it does help to follow along as I read it in the Bible. And just try and imagine you've never heard this story before. It's absolutely amazing. Daniel chapter 3, verse 1. King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold 90 feet high and 9 feet wide, and set it up on the plain of Jura in the province of Babylon. He then summoned the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other provincial officials to come to the dedication of the image he had set up. So the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other provincial officials assembled for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up, and they stood before it. Then the herald loudly proclaimed, "This is what you are commanded to do, O peoples, nations, and men of every language. As soon as you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipes, and all kinds of music, you must fall down and worship the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. Whoever does not fall down and worship will immediately be thrown into a blazing furnace." Therefore, as soon as they heard the sound of a horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, and all kinds of music, all the peoples, nations, and men of every language fell down and worshipped the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. At this time, some astrologers came forward and denounced the Jews. They said to King Nebuchadnezzar, "O king, live forever. You have issued a decree, O king, that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipes, and all kinds of music must fall down and worship the image of gold, and that whoever does not fall down and worship will be thrown into a blazing furnace. But there are some Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who pay no attention to you, O king. They neither serve your gods nor worship the image of gold you have set up." Furious with rage, Nebuchadnezzar summoned Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So these men were brought before the king, and Nebuchadnezzar said to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the image of gold I have set up? Now when you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipes, and all kinds of music, if you are ready to fall down and worship the image I made, very good. But if you do not worship it, you will be thrown immediately into a blazing furnace. Then what god will be able to rescue you from my hand?" Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the god we serve is able to save us from it, and he will rescue us from your hand, O king. But even if he does not, we want you to know, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up." Then Nebuchadnezzar was furious with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and his attitude towards them changed. He ordered the furnace to be heated 7 times hotter than usual and commanded some of the strongest soldiers in his army to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and throw them into the blazing furnace. So these men, wearing their robes, trousers, turbans, and other clothes, were bound and thrown into the blazing furnace. The king's command was so urgent, and the furnace was so hot, that the flames of the fire killed the soldiers who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and these 3 men, firmly tied, fell into the blazing furnace. Then King Nebuchadnezzar leaped to his feet in amazement and asked his advisors, "Weren't there 3 men that we tied up and threw into the fire?" They replied, "Certainly, O king." He said, "Look, I see 4 men walking around in the fire, unbound and unharmed, and the 4th looks like a son of the gods." Nebuchadnezzar then approached the opening of the blazing furnace and shouted, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out, come here." So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the fire, and the satraps, prefects, governors, and royal advisors crowded around them. They saw that the fire had not harmed their bodies, nor was a hair of their head singed, their robes were not scorched, and there was no smell of fire on them. Then Nebuchadnezzar said, "Praise be to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and rescued his servants. They trusted in him and defied the king's command and were willing to give up their lives rather than serve or worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I decree that the people of any nation or language or say, therefore, I decree that the people of any nation or language who say anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be cut in pieces and their houses be turned into piles of rubble, for no other God can save in this way." Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. Amen. What a great story that we've read together this morning. If I asked you to tell me some things that were great, I wonder what you would say. Perhaps you might say, your pet is great. Or maybe you might say, time off school, summer holidays is great. Or maybe you might say, going to the beach is great. Or candy floss is great. Or money is great. Or cars are great. Or whatever it is. Now, those are good things, but they're not truly great. This is such a well-known passage, and it's treasured by many of us, I'm sure. And what this passage reminds us is God is great. Now, I need to be reminded about that, and so do you every day, because we forget about that so quickly. Every day, we face the temptation to put other things before God, to elevate and make other things great before him. And what this passage does is show us the greatness of God and also the difference that God can make in ordinary people's lives. So what's the starting point? Well, the starting point in our passage that we read in this story, which is true, is all about King Nebuchadnezzar. King Nebuchadnezzar built a statue that was 90 feet high and 9 feet wide. Now, if you're struggling to visualize that, that's the same height as 15 of me. Now, you're probably struggling to visualize that as well, but it's 15 of me and a bit wider than me as well. And this thing was made of solid gold. It must have cost an absolute fortune in today's money. We're not told exactly what the statue looked like, although many people think it was a statue of King Nebuchadnezzar himself. They say it was an image of him. One historical book says this: Nebuchadnezzar attempted to destroy all the gods of the land, that all nations should worship Nebuchadnezzar only, and that all tongues and tribes should call upon him as a god. Now, big word coming up now that you probably won't use too often. Why not try and get it into a sentence today? But Nebuchadnezzar was egocentric. It was all about him. It was all about his greatness, and he wanted everybody to know how great he was, or at least how great he thought he was. And he thought the easiest way to show how great he was by making a statue 90 feet high out of solid gold. But that's not where he ended. He then issues a decree that all his officials, and we're not going to go through that list again, but all those officials had to come for the dedication ceremony of the statue. But they didn't just have to come, did they? What did they have to do? By national law, they had to worship the statue, the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And if they didn't, what was the threat? The threat was being thrown into a blazing furnace. So the starting point in our story is of a terrible, terrible king. A king that enforces people to worship statues, which was probably of himself. Now, what sort of a king would do that? Well, we must realize that this even happens today. If you go to North Korea, I'm not sure about the new leader, but the old leader was worshipped as a god. I remember reading about some people who had managed to escape from North Korea, and they were scared to think bad things about the leader of North Korea because they thought he could read their minds, even though they were now well away from the country. In fact, these people could not believe it when they heard the news that the king had died because they thought he was a god. They'd been brainwashed into thinking this guy was going to live forever. In North Korea, those who don't worship the king, well, terrible things happen to them. See, what was happening in Nebuchadnezzar's day even happens today. But what we see in Nebuchadnezzar's life is actually an amplified insight into everybody's heart. So the starting point in our reading in Daniel chapter 3, this wicked king, is actually the starting point for every person on the face of this planet. We are more like Nebuchadnezzar than perhaps we would like to admit. Now, you might think, I don't have enough gold to make a statue of myself. Well, that's granted. But we all demand our own way some of the time. And when we do that, we're saying we're more important than those around us. We all, at times, don't do what God says. And by doing that, we are setting ourselves up as God. We're making life about me, when actually it's all about him. Now let me show you some other people in this passage. Now you might feel a little bit sorry for them, but there are all these people, and again, I'm not going to read the list out again, but you see them in verse 2. It's all his officials, Nebuchadnezzar's officials from around the Babylonian Empire. They were commanded to come and worship this statue. Now what did they do? They worshipped the statue. Now think about this. God commands people to worship him alone. But what did these people do? They worshipped the statue of Nebuchadnezzar. Now you might say they were only doing that to preserve their own life. But what they were actually doing was saying that their lives, their existence, was more important than God and doing what God wanted. I wonder how often we do that even today. See, essentially, we live like life is all about me. I think one of the dangerous things that we can fall into, people in the West, is trying to make life as comfortable for ourselves as possible. And the thing is about making our life comfortable is that is not an essentially wicked thing, is it? It's not wicked to have a comfortable life. But the thing is, we can compromise to try and get that comfortable life. And we're going to think about this more later, but it might be things like not speaking up about Jesus. We do that because we want a comfortable life. We don't want social embarrassment. And in that small example, what we're doing is essentially saying life isn't about God. It's actually all about me. So in some ways, we're a bit like King Nebuchadnezzar. But then the story moves on, and don't you just love these guys? Aren't these guys absolutely amazing? In contrast to everyone else, we have Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. This is amazing. They have been invited to the dedication of King Nebuchadnezzar's golden image, 90 feet high, 90 feet wide, 9 feet wide. And what do these three men do? The music starts to play, everyone else is worshipping, and they do not budge. I can imagine they had pretty sweaty palms. I can imagine they were thinking, oh, the music's starting. Do we have to do this? What are we going to do? They're being different. Do you like to be different? I don't like people thinking I'm different. I don't like people thinking he's odd. Don't we like to be the same as everyone else? And what's it like at school? How do you feel at school when everyone's saying, you know, what they're doing at the weekend and you say you're going to church? Or what about when you're a bit older and you think, I shouldn't go to that party and you're the only one that isn't going? Or how about at work and the lottery syndicate or whatever it is and you're not doing it because you think it's wrong? And what about the work Christmas do and it's a free bar and you're different? You know, to honor God means to be different. How'd you feel? Now, we love to fit in, don't we? And that comes from a deep inner need to be accepted, to be cherished, to be loved. And we don't like being different. But for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they were totally different. Everyone else is on their faces worshipping this false god. And there these guys are just not budging. They will not worship this statue. And don't think this was an easy thing. You know, all their peers are there. All the top executives from right around the kingdom are all gathered in this place. All the intellects, all the smart alecks are all there. Everyone else is worshipping and they just stood there. Can you imagine? Perhaps some people were sniggering. I mean, they'd all know the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and how their God couldn't protect them and how they went into exile, or they thought he couldn't protect them. They all knew the story, and they'd be thinking, why aren't you giving up on your God? Why aren't you worshipping Babylon's gods, who are obviously now more powerful? But what we must realize about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego is that this wasn't the first time they'd made a stand. Look with me at verse 12. In verse 12, it says this. This is what the people are saying to the king about them. But there are some Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who pay no attention to you, O king. They neither serve your gods nor worship the image of gold you have set up. There are two things in that verse. One is they're not bowing down to the image of gold that he set up. The other thing is they are unwilling to serve Nebuchadnezzar's gods. This has been going on for some time. They were known for being unwilling to follow Babylon's customs. Now, let me ask you a question. Are you known for being a Christian? These guys were known for being atheists. They refused to follow Babylon's gods. They were known for being different. I wonder, do people know that you are a Christian? Let me encourage you. When you start a new job, when you start a new class, when you go to a new college, the best thing to do is nail your colours to the mast as early as possible. Let people know. That's what these guys did. They couldn't be in a more hostile place. But yet everyone knew they refused to worship the gods of Babylon. But it wasn't just social embarrassment they were facing, was it? See, that's all we face, really. Maybe it might cost us a promotion, but ultimately it's social embarrassment. What were they facing? Look with me at verse 16. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to save us from it, and he will rescue us from your hand, O king. But even if he does not, we want you to know, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up. These guys are facing the flaming furnace. And they were saying, we will rather go to the furnace than worship anything other than our God. They were unwilling to compromise. These guys were not about making life as comfortable as possible. They were not about making life easy. Their lives were centered on God and on being obedient to God. Now, here's the simple mistake that we can all make. We can all look at Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and we can think these guys are heroes. These guys are almost superhuman, but that's to miss the point of the passage. These three are different because God has done something amazing in their lives. These guys are not different, are not amazing in and of themselves and their own willpower and resolve. They're amazing because God has change them. Listen to this really carefully. You do not go to a blazing furnace out of duty. Now, this morning, some of us may have come to corporate worship out of duty. It's my duty. I better go. It's not going to be something I delight in. I don't really delight in meeting with God's people. I don't delight in hearing the Bible, but I know I should go to corporate worship. It's a duty. It's something I know I need to do. Duty is not a strong enough motivator to make you go to a fiery furnace. There is no chance you would say, well, I better do it. Yeah, I better go to a fiery furnace. That's something I better do out of worship for God. You do not do that. you will only go to the fiery furnace if you love King Jesus. It is only a heart that burns with authentic, real love for Jesus that will be willing to pay the ultimate cost and give their life in obedience to him. Only hearts that burn with love for Jesus are willing, if necessary, to burn for Jesus. God had touched these three men's lives. They had tasted joy from God that no earthly thing could ever match. And so they were willing to say to the king, "Do your worst. If God doesn't rescue us, to die is gain anyway." They knew Proverbs 18:10. "The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous run to it and are safe." They knew that they were eternally safe. There is a children's film that some of you may have seen. It's called Over the Hedge. Any of you youngsters seen that? Yeah, some hands going up. Over the Hedge. It's a great film about some animals that go over the hedge to try and get some food off some humans. And there is this great scene in this film where, I don't know if he's a raccoon or whatever he is, opens this packet of crisps, and all these animals have ever tasted is tree bark and leaves. And he opens his packet of Doritos, other brands are available, and the animals just get blasted in these like cheesy smell, and like, what is that? It's amazing. And they just want to go over the hedge and find some more crisps to eat, and they come back, and one of the animals says, "It's too dangerous. Let's just go back to eating bark." And there he is, chomping on bark. He's going, "Yeah, it takes some time to digest, but it's full of fiber." And he's there biting, eating his bark. And all the other animals are going, "I just want a donut. I just want some of that food." And when I saw that, I thought, wow, that's amazing. When we've tasted joy in God, everything else just seems like tree bark. Everything else just seems like nothing in comparison to joy in Jesus. That's what these three guys had experienced. They experienced a delight in knowing God that far outstripped even their own lives. They had hearts that burned for Jesus. Well, they didn't know it as Jesus then. Of course, he lived pre-cross, but a relationship with God. And that genuine experience they had led them to radical obedience. Now, the thrill of our story, of course, is that they were rescued, weren't they? It's incredible. But this whole story is pointing us to the New Testament and the Lord Jesus Christ, because Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego show tremendous obedience and God saved them. We're not like that. We do not show obedience. We show disobedience. We deserve the blazing furnace of hell. But God in his goodness sent Jesus. And Jesus was totally obedient, like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But unlike Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, God didn't save Jesus. When Jesus was just hours before the cross and he was saying, "God, if there's another way, can we take that option?" There was nothing. There was no change in plan. There was no last minute rescue for Jesus. Jesus had to go to the cross. Jesus had to perish because that's the only way how people like you and me who are disobedient don't need to face the consequence for our sin. For Jesus to take it in our place. And my prayer for all of us this morning is that all of us would know that authentic joy that comes from knowing Jesus, which means we are radically obedient even when it costs us. It's highly, 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 highly unlikely that's going to mean we're threatened with a fiery furnace. But life might get pretty uncomfortable at work. Life might get pretty difficult at school. Life might get pretty awkward with our neighbors. But if we have a joy in Jesus, we're not going to be craving all those joys, all those other things. We will obey and know it as a delight. In our passage, we begin with a pagan king who is committing idolatry. But through the sacrificial obedience of these three friends, God receives glory. Did you notice at the very end of the passage how Nebuchadnezzar announces or makes his proclamation that no one can now say anything bad about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's God because he is the God Most High. Incredible. God receives glory through these three's costly, radical obedience. As we obey God and are radically obedient because we have been set free by Him, we will bring Him glory. The Lord Jesus Himself said, "Let your light shine before men that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven." I wonder if we're doing that. I wonder if we're showing people how great God is because of the change He has made in our lives. God is great. He reigns with majesty and splendor. To Him be the glory. And let's close now as we sing our final song, "There is a higher throne." We'll stand to sing.